Some things you wouldn't mind being stuck with, like a huge inheritance. But a phone that has to be plugged in just right so it charges is not one of those things. Switch to Verizon and we'll pay off your old phone up to $800 via prepaid MasterCard for a new one on us. Just trade in any phone from our top brands with select unlimited plans. $829.99 purchase with new smartphone line on select unlimited plans. Minimum $90 per month with auto pay plus taxes and fees for 36 months required. Plus $830 trade-in slash promo credit applied over 36 months. Trade-in terms apply. Payoff phone requires smartphone purchase and port-in with new smartphone line on select plan. Must provide most recent bill showing payoff amount of eligible phone. Additional terms apply.
I'm Commander Shepard, and this is my favorite lorecast on the Citadel.
Welcome to the Mass Effect Lorecast, the podcast where we explore the vast lore behind the Mass Effect games. Specters, welcome back to the Mass Effect Lorecast. I almost didn't unmute myself. Also, I noticed today, Sam, that it's a little bit weird for me to say Specters, welcome back to the Mass Effect Lorecast, when we're talking about Saren on this episode.
Who is, and or was rather, you know, one of the worst Specters, but yeah.
Right. I don't know that I'm welcoming him back to the show, but everybody else is welcome. Welcome back, Sam. I'm Tom. This is Sam. This is what we do. We talk about Mass Effect. And I'm excited because we're getting into some things about Saren that I was not aware of. So I'm imagining there's other people out there who are not aware of both Saren and his forgotten brother and details around that.
Yeah, of course, Saren's one of the most important characters in the trilogy, and he's a villain, right? But we're talking about his little-known brother as well that a lot of people don't know about. He's a Turian, of course. His name's Desolus. I think their significance, both of them, it outstrips their on-screen time because Saren is only in one of the games. Desolus isn't in any of the games. So these, we're going to be pulling a lot of details from the comics and one of the Mass Effect novels. So if you haven't read those, then buckle up because this is probably all going to be new to you.
Desolus, like desolate. Like, oof, that sounds dark.
Yeah, I feel like it was, yeah, play on words, like desolate.
It's a good thing I'm not a writer for one of these games, because I would have, like, Saren and his brother, Wally, or something like that, and everyone would be like...
Glorbo.
Glorbo. Snorpdrog. Snorpdrog, really? All right, so this is normally where we start out, right? We dig into the background and the stuff that goes on before the game. So what do we know about all that?
Right, you know, so... Saren's background starts much before we meet him in Mass Effect 1, right? We know he was born in 2139 to apparently a military family. He has the brother Desolus. Like I said, Desolus is a general, and he appears in the Mass Effect Evolution comic. We don't know a ton about Saren's family apart from that. Just like every other Turian, though, we know that Saren enlisted into military service at just 15 years old. It's presumable then that his brother did as well, if his brother is a general. And Saren quickly rose through the ranks after that. He eventually becomes a Specter because he's extremely proficient in what he does. Never mind the fact that he's doing those things at any cost necessary. In fact, if anything, that fits into the mold of the very first Specter they recruited. But he eventually becomes a Specter. And if you're doing the math, you know, born in 2139, enlists at 15, that means he was about 18 years old in the Turian military when the first contact war against the system's alliance erupted.
Wait, so is this why he hates humans? Is this like the flip side of a lot of what we see with the human characters and why they hate Turians, but we're seeing it now from his perspective?
A little bit, but also not really.
Okay. All right.
So, well, that right there, that is exactly the question that we're going to get into for pretty much the rest of this episode. It all goes back to the foreign, there was a human ambassador to the council named Anita Goyle. This is someone who, if you don't recognize her name, don't feel bad because she wasn't in the games. She's mentioned, I think, in Andromeda slightly, but she's never alive during the games because, or she's not at least present. Her primary presence is from the book Mass Effect Revelation. And she has a, she is to Anderson what Udina was to Shepard. So Anita Goyle is the ambassador, and she talks to Anderson a lot. She tells Anderson, Saren just hates humans because he lost his brother Desolus in the war, in the First Contact War.
Okay.
And that feels like a simple enough hand-wavy justification, right, to say like, oh, well, of course he hates humans, right? He lost someone that he loved, and now he's become this villain. But we later find out that that's not really true. And this is also an interesting kind of situation because Mass Effect Revelation released slightly before Mass Effect 1 did.
Yeah, it was.
If I remember the releases of the books correctly.
I mean, and that tracks with my memory, but if somebody wants to correct us on
that, because it's supposed
to
be a companion novel.
Right.
It's just leading right into the beginning of Mass Effect 1. So Mass Effect Revelation releases before Mass Effect 1 does, and then the comics release later. The comics are what disproves Anita Goyle's claim that Saren only hates humans because he lost his brother in the war. It's a half truth because his death is shown in the comics. Desolus does die in the comics, along with a lot of great background about Saren's villain origin story, but it's not really during the war.
Hmm. Okay. So let's get into the origin story. Like, which comic are we starting with here?
Right. Mass Effect Evolution. I don't know if we've ever gone too much into it at length, but this is also the same comic where we see the Elusive Man's origin story. So this is really cool. This entire comic is a massive crossroads of all of these different important characters who are like older, you know, by the time we meet them. And that, right. Like, you get it. It's a prequel, basically. And you get to see where all of these important people were before they rose to such prominence. And Saren, not the least of which. So the story starts on the human colony of Shanxi. But it's during the First Contact War. And specifically, this is during the time where the Turians are kicking the humans' ass. And the Turians are occupying, you know, streets. They're blowing up entire blocks just to wipe out, you know, single marine teams. And there's just a ton of, there's Turians on the ground side as well. Well, we see this group of people, humans, three of them, Jack Harper and his companions, Eva Corre and Ben Hislop. They're mercenaries and they're kind of acting as this resistance force because they're not official Alliance personnel, but they are fighting the Turians. If the name Jack Harper sounds familiar, that's because that is the Elusive Man. That's his name.
That's Tim.
that's Tim.
That's Tim before he was Tim.
Oh, they are fighting some Turians in the beginning of this story, and they capture a prisoner. Well, we'll go into more detail about what exactly the Turians were doing there on Shanxi, maybe in an episode specifically dedicated to the comic, or if it comes up in this part, we will, but I want to focus on Saren and Desolus. So it turns out that the prisoner that the Elusive Man and his companions take is Saren's brother, Desolus. And as we noted, Desolus is a general. So this is kind of a high profile prisoner they've all of a sudden captured. And it quickly turns out that Desolus is equally, if not more, racist against humans than Saren is.
So it runs in the family. Wonderful.
Yes.
Yeah.
Saren takes after this, like, very honestly. Desolus is a horribly speciesist?
Yeah, they're different species. Yeah, they're not.
Speciesist.
Yeah. I mean, I guess, well, race, they're different races. They're both.
Xenophobic.
There you go. Yes.
Yes. So Desolus is a horribly xenophobic person. And I feel like this fandom a lot in Mass Effect gives xenophobia a pass if it's the aliens doing it to us.
Right.
But if it's the humans doing it, they're like, that's terrible. Stop doing that.
Right.
Ashley space racist. Ashley big bad.
Yeah. It's the it's the cultural thing where you can poo-poo on the majority group, but all the minority groups you have to give a pass to. I mean, this happens in our own culture a lot as well. Yeah.
But that's funny because humans are the minority group.
Right. But from our perspective, we're always the majority because we're the humans. Yeah, I get it.
Right. Because we're always around humans. Anyway, that's my soapbox about that. But Desolus is terribly xenophobic. So then this group of human mercenaries, including the Elusive Man, they try something clever using the general's own comms device to track back to his own crew. But they find that the general was there on the planet because, and this is a massive spoiler alert for the comic, if you don't want to hear this, skip forward about 30 seconds. The general was there because of an artifact called the Arca Monolith. And we can go into more of it later, but it is Reaper tech and it indoctrinates people. So the general was there because he got word of this artifact and they were trying to recover it for themselves. Anyway, Ben Hislop, one of the Elusive Man's companions at the very beginning, he ends up touching the artifact and he dies, quote unquote.
Another hand touches the beacon. Oh, wait, that's a different game series.
Another hand. I should have a sound effect.
Another hand touches the beacon.
God, that plays everywhere. Anyway, Ben dies. Uh-huh. Ben, quote unquote, dies because he doesn't really die, but he touches the artifact. And then Jack kind of gets in contact with the magic, the space magic of the artifact, because I think he was trying to save Ben. Mm-hmm. And he doesn't die. He's kind of knocked out, but he has this vision. And then he gets these like kind of advanced powers, but he doesn't. He's not completely zombified and husk-like like Ben becomes. Like we saw in so many of the games whenever someone, you know, was just made into a direct husk from the Reapers. That's what Ben looks like.
Right.
And he's not even talking English anymore.
Huh. But Jack is fine. I mean, clearly later on he's fine too, but like, yeah.
Yes, because Jack had this kind of indirect contact. So I think that's kind of what saved him there. And ultimately, you know, it's Jack and Eva who get captured. So it's a flip-flop situation. You know, they just captured Saren's brother. Now they're the ones getting captured because Ben died and Jack got knocked out by the artifact. And then Saren is assigned to oversee them. Mm-hmm. So Saren is acting as like prison warden and right-hand man for his brother.
I'm sure he's going to be super nice to them, especially now that his brother's captured.
It's kind of weird watching Saren as like not the head honcho. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
All right. So yeah, what happens? And he's just as ambitious.
Yeah. So what happens next?
So Saren and Desolus both bring Jack and Eva to Arcturus Station for a prisoner of war exchange with the Alliance. And then they hand them over to none other than General Williams, which is Ashley's grandfather. So we've got Ashley's grandfather, we've got Saren, we've got the Elusive Man, we've got Saren's brother. You know, there's so many characters in this who have such a huge significance to the entire story of Mass Effect, and yet it's this one comic that a lot of people haven't read.
Yeah, we've joked about this before, how it's like so convenient that these people that we know about later all ended up in the same place at the same time when there's so many people out in the universe doing all sorts of things, or even in that conflict being in different places, you know. But of course, it works fun. It's fun for the stories to be like, oh, that character is related to this person. That's how we know them. Yeah, all of that. Right.
Yeah. I mean, it just makes everyone kind of more heroic, right? Mm-hmm. More like legend. Well, we have a screenshot from one of the panels of this comic here. And so during this prisoner exchange, I'll just kind of describe this photo. So you see Eva tackling Desolus and she's calling him a bastard. And she's pissed off at Saren's brother because she's claiming that he just let Ben die. That they didn't try to help Ben after he touched the artifact. And that's kind of true, but why would they, you know? And Saren steps in and he just kind of picks her up by the collar of the shirt and drags her off of his brother. And then Desolus tells Saren to be careful because humans are fragile, even though they bark like Varen.
Okay.
So some light equivocating human beings to animals there.
Yeah, I mean, and xenophobic, racist, like this is one of those, you know, like, yeah.
Yeah,
how that goes.
And I don't know. This is my personal opinion, just from that panel, that Saren was so on it to kind of drag her off of his brother that we get this idea that Saren's protective of his family. He's protective of his brother. Despite the fact that his brother had like bodyguards right there.
Yeah, well, yeah, that makes sense though. Like, and Saren is not one to hesitate to act, I would imagine. Like,
right. He doesn't care. Yeah. I mean, and I think that's why Desolus actually said, hey, be careful, because Desolus knows that Saren may get a little carried away and just kill someone. Yeah, I mean, that's interesting. But we'll also go into a little bit later why those bodyguards did nothing. Because, again, they're not normal bodyguards. But we'll get into it later. So this prisoner exchange happens, right? And then Saren and his brother take the artifact back to the Turian homeworld of Palavin because they're under this impression that it can advance Turian evolution somehow, making them upgraded with this kind of zombified cyber strength that we saw in the husks. Just think of like husks, but Turians.
That sounds like it's going to work out great.
Right. It's not quite like Marauder shields from Mass Effect 3. They look a little less altered than that, but their intelligence is still gone and they still have that super strength. And so that happened to their initial researchers who found this Arca monolith. So they're trying to take this artifact back to Palavin to find a way to control the super strong zombified Turians.
Right. So, OK, so they take this artifact, this Reaper artifact, back to Palavin.
Yes.
Then what happens then?
You know, if this sounds familiar to anyone, Reaper tech control, you know, we can totally harness this. It's because it did happen with a number of other races. Number one, we knew what happened with the Batarians. They tried to conceal their discovery of the Leviathan of Dis. It didn't work out for them. There's strong implications there that the Reapers were actually able to indoctrinate the highest echelons of Batarian government. And that's why they became such a fascist autocracy over there, trying to constantly wage war against different races. But there's a lot of fascist themes in what Desolus then does with the artifact. So Jack and Eva keep pursuing this artifact, right? Because they're free now, but they also, like, Jack has been changed. Like, his eyes are now what we remember the elusive man's eyes look like.
So this is the origin story for why he has the weird eyes.
Yes.
I always assumed that they were some sort of implants, like they were an intentional thing. But it's actually because he came in close, or at least almost contact with this artifact.
Indirect contact.
Yeah.
It's kind of weird because in the comics, the eyes, like, they're there in one panel and then the next one they're gone. And like it's almost like they're situationally activated in the comics.
I wonder if he can like make it happen. And so later on, he just keeps it on all the time.
Maybe. I'm not sure. It's not really directly addressed in the comic, at least not that I saw. So Jack and Eva keep pursuing this artifact, and Saren and Desolus are quite aware of that. So Saren is tasked with hunting them down. And so now you have one villain in the Mass Effect trilogy chasing the other villain in the Mass Effect trilogy. It's just an amazing arc.
Right. And another capture. They're in the same situation. So we've been here before. Like, okay.
Right.
Yeah.
And the reader, as me as the reader, I'm just thinking, like, do I really give a shit who wins here? Like,
they can kill each other for all I care, but I know that's not going to happen. Yeah.
Right. I'd prefer you both lose. So Saren does kind of win here. He hunts them down and then he captures them again. Mm-hmm. And we have another pick. We're showing it on the live stream here. It's one of the panels from.
Yeah. And just a reminder, if you're listening on the audio version, you want to see these, you missed the live stream, these go up on the Mass Effect Lorecast YouTube channel, so you can always check them out over there.
Yes, absolutely. And then you can see our beautiful faces, and you can see my beard that I desperately need to shave.
No, it looks good, man. I'm speaking as a guy who regularly doesn't also shave his own face. But anyway,
well,
so
thank you.
What do we see in the panel?
So Saren and Desolus want to know why Jack, a.k.a. the elusive man, was not completely zombified, but he still kind of retains some knowledge from it. So they keep him around, and they take him and Eva to Palavin. And then, by doing so, Jack and Eva become the first human beings to ever set foot on the Turian homeworld, which is really cool. And just a side note here, I really love the way that the writers describe the setting of Palavin when they're being taken there. And we have a panel that shows a picture of it, but I really want to bring it up just for the narrative description of how it looks. Tom, you want to read it?
The panel? So it says,
Yeah.
In war, timing is everything. Weeks earlier, the Alliance would indeed have given everything to have agents visit Palavin, homeworld of the Turians, their one-time enemies. They would have seen a radiation-scarred planet turned civilized, a world beaten into submission by an even more rugged people, themselves evolving to survive and thrive there. They are a people who value tradition and honor, And while I almost did it without cracking up, and while a general returning from a stalemate might not normally expect a hero's welcome.
Yeah. And then that's kind of how we go into it, because he does get a hero's welcome, even though the Turians kind of did just lose that war. Humanity had just taken back Shanxi. And then the council stepped in and said, nope, we got to declare a peace treaty. So the Turians got pushed off, and that was the last word. Mm-hmm. And so now Decilus, who's this general who got captured and then freed ultimately, but captured and then his side lost, he's going back to the homeworld. And so he lands on Palavin. He exits this ship. There's a crowd waiting, and he's with his bodyguards that I mentioned earlier, who are really just zombified, indoctrinated, advanced Turians in robes. And he does this masterful job at rallying the crowd, despite the fact that, again, he's really coming off of a terrible loss. But when have facts ever stood in the way of a malignant narcissist? I don't know.
That's a great quote. Wow, that's true. That's very true.
And this is a very powerful scene in this comic, because he's coming out of the ship. He's addressing this crowd, and he's saying he's the first general to address them since the council brokered peace in the First Contact War. So already there's this slim, like very, very sly indirect implication that it's really the council's fault, mm-hmm. because they brokered peace. Mm-hmm. And then he also admits that he knows that it's shameful in Turian culture to admit defeat. Okay, half truth here, right? And then he mixes in the half lie. And then he finally just says, but that's because I'm not shameful, because I'm not admitting defeat. Instead, I am introducing a path forward for Turians. And it's this path that's draped in the mythology of their own past.
Sounds inspirational. Okay, where are you going? Where are you going with this?
So he introduces the indoctrinated Turians he has as bodyguards as something called, quote, Voluvian priests.
Right, because zombie soldiers, it doesn't sound as good.
Well, their faces are kind of obscured behind the shadow of the cloaks, right? So yeah. You can't really see their faces, but they do look mysterious, and you can clearly tell they're a little bit changed. And he calls them Voluvian priests. This is a noun that would hold a lot of weight if you are a Turian on Palavin, because this is something of an ancient myth. It's like, you know, Achilles or Ajax, but they weren't necessarily looked up to like that. They were mm-hmm. just kind of revered. Mm-hmm. And he refers to them, he says, quote, dressed as you remember them from the legends. For centuries, no one has been worthy enough to wear these robes. He says these are warriors returning from the battlefield whose, quote, faith and, quote, fighting spirit has transformed them, and that they then chose him to help them achieve their mission, their holy quest.
Only
this whole
I
thing reeks of fascism.
Only I could have brought this wonderful thing to you. It was all because of me, and without me, you would all be lost. Yeah, this absolutely.
Yeah, this whole thing reeks of fascism. I mean, okay, so here's I'm gonna paint a picture, right? So you got Saren standing next to his brother, right hand man. Very hard military presence mixed with religious presence of these Voluvian priests in robes. And Decilus and Saren are flanked by this entourage of them. And then they try to carry the artifact to a sanctified ancient Turian temple of legend. And the crowd is following them. And it's like this dictator's political show of force of like, I'm going to march across.
Actually, yeah.
It's like, I'm going to march across, what was it? Saint someone square, June 1st, 2020.
You know what I'm talking about.
There was a certain wannabe dictator in the United States who did this and gassed people off the steps of a church in the process.
Yeah, this is a mix of politics, military, and religion all together in order to just pull power for himself.
All of the topics that we were told are impolite conversation. This is about
the things that I try to avoid talking about when family comes over for holidays. Funny how that works. Let's put aside the whole like, clearly this is a warning sign. This is fascism writ large. This is, you know, the consolidation of power under one man, or Turian in this case. from his perspective, highly effective.
Yes, very, very effective. He's, like I said, he was masterful at rallying this crowd. He wasn't getting pushback from them. They were actually kind of marveling at him and following him, you know, lockstep to this temple, because I think they were hooked. They were waiting to see what was next.
Right.
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 And that's,
they're in desperate need of some solution. They need somebody to swoop in and solve their problems for them. Maybe they need to tie it to their ancestry, the mythology and religion of their people. They need somebody in a place of power. He's a general. Like, all of these things add up to, oh, he's the right guy at the right time. And I'm not going to preach. It's just like, how many times do we get these things in stories like this? And then when they happen in reality, so many people are just like, oh, that sounds like a good idea. It's like, we get warnings in literature all the time about how this works.
It's because people read history as if it's fiction.
Right.
You know what I mean? They read history thinking, well, that can never happen now.
Right. Well, it's not the same, because my beliefs are different from the past. Those past beliefs are fake and mine are real or whatever. And it's,
Anyway. And I think that's actually like completely relevant to Mass Effect, because I think Turians had also deluded themselves into thinking that they were smarter, more advanced than the ancient Turians who built that temple.
Right.
And that's something that we'll get into a little bit later. But for now, it looks like Decilus's coup is going perfectly according to plan.
Right. Yeah, that's another element. The whole like, well, we're smarter than our ancestors were. We're better than them. We can't fail. You know, that whole thing, while still being desperate for a solution all at the same time and aware of your own vulnerability. It's such a weird mix of stuff. Anyway, hey, it's time to go talk about our patrons and do our mid-break. So let's go do that. And we'll be right back. Talk about all these wonderful, happy things. Here we go.
Some things you wouldn't mind being stuck with, like a huge inheritance. But a phone that has to be plugged in just right so it charges is not one of those things. Switch to Verizon and we'll pay off your old phone up to $800 via prepaid MasterCard for a new one on us. Just trade in any phone from our top brands with select unlimited plans. $829.99 purchase with new smartphone line on select unlimited plans. Minimum $90 per month with auto pay plus taxes and fees for 36 months required. Plus $830 trade-in slash promo credit applied over 36 months. Trade-in terms apply. Payoff phone requires smartphone purchase and port-in with new smartphone line on select plan. Must provide most recent bill showing payoff amount of eligible phone. Additional terms apply.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Message coming in. Patching it through.
I am sovereign, and this
Lorecast
is mine. I like the sound of that.
All right, we've got a new patron this week. Welcome to Colton. I can't talk. Colton B. Welcome to the Patreon. Thank you for joining us, and welcome to all of our patrons. In fact, thank you to all of our patrons, including our Shepherd tier patrons, Kolkashins, Edboy, Kirisi, and Lieutenant Ticino. Thank you so much for your support. And to all 62 of our current patrons, thank you for being here. If you're interested in checking out all the different things you can get by helping to support us, if this show is helping you get through your workday, your commutes, things like that, head over to patreon.com/MassEffectLorecast. Check out all the different tiers, the t-shirts, the stickers, the ad-free episodes, joining us on our patron chats, all the stuff that you can get, and see if there's something you'd like to do to help support us. Also, we've got a new review that came in. If you leave a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts, of course, we're going to read it out on a future episode of the show. Actually, you know what? I'm wrong. I think we've already covered these. So we don't actually have a new review. I misremembered. But if you'd like to leave a review, we'll read it out on the future episodes. And you can also rate the show on Spotify or whatever other platforms that you listen to the show on. Or, you know, send us nice comments on the YouTube videos. That would be wonderful as well. All right. Thanks for your support, everybody. Let's move on with the rest of the show.
Spit it out. Or are you trying to build suspense?
You're so dense, sir. Obviously, I do not know as much about human relationships as I thought.
All right, so this sounds like a kind of a masterful stroke on Decilus's side, but how does this work out? Where does this go?
Well, the temple The temple has been closed and sealed off, but and revered for a long, long time, and Deicolus aims to open it once again. So he's draping himself in these themes of mythology in the past, but also bucking trends and saying, I'm going to shatter the you know, rules and inhibitions of the past. And this is pretty compelling, right? To anyone who doesn't know what he's doing. I think the elusive man, actually, to his credit, Jack sees through this. And he says, you know, he's rallying the crowd. And while Saren is also, meanwhile, acting as Deicolus's lieutenant, ordering all of these indoctrinated Turians to carry the artifact inside. But there's one problem. They won't. They won't do it.
Okay.
And then slowly that Saren and Deicolus, they start realizing that these mutated Turians, they don't follow them. They follow the artifact. And it just so happened that Deicolus was carrying the artifact around everywhere.
Right. Okay. So he thought he was in control of them, but in actuality, he wasn't.
No, he's not. And yet again, another theme in Mass Effect where it's a fight for control, when in reality, you're never going to win that fight. Mm-hmm. With the Reapers.
Yeah.
They will always hold control. And so after holding Jack, aka the elusive man, captive for a long time, Deicolus reveals his master plan. He says that he plans to bring Turians to the artifact, so intentionally, so that they will be turned into these zombified, super strong, mutant, indoctrinated Turians. And he's hoping some of them end up partially conscious and cognizant like Jack, like the elusive man did.
Right. Like if this happened to you, then we can still utilize that part of it. But he's willing to risk so many lives who don't turn out that way being zombified and doesn't even understand the future potential danger of all of those zombified Turians who are now indoctrinated by the Reapers.
Well, I think he sees it as a win-win because his hopes for creating another being like Jack kind of die off, and it looks like Deicolus is settling, but in reality he's just rearranging his goals. Now he's thinking about making an army of these zombified mutants so that he can rule the galaxy effectively, again thinking that he can control them just by carrying the artifact around. And he's thinking, if I just bring the artifact physically with me, even if they're really just following the artifact, they'll defend the artifact and my enemies will undoubtedly try to attack it. Huh. So he's thinking he can manipulate battles, basically.
Like dogs with a bone. It's just like, as long as I keep carrying this bone, the dogs are going to stay with me.
Yeah. So he decides that he's going to lure crowds of Turians there, promising them advancement into the new kind of Metaturian race. And Deicolus says, quote, the time for equality of races in the Citadel is past. The Turian destiny is at hand, and tonight it begins.
Dun, dun, dun. Wouldn't this have been crazy if, like, he was the big bad that we had to deal with in Mass Effect 1 because he succeeded at this stuff? Totally different game. Totally different game.
This ain't your grandfather's Turian hierarchy. This is Deicolus's Turian hierarchy now. The next panel is a line of Turians being marched into the temple while he says this. And meanwhile, Jack Harper is trying to stop him from carrying through with this terrible plan, which is amazing, right? That the elusive man would be acting on the good side, actually.
Right.
And he's realized part of the artifact's nature, the elusive man has. But Saren is going full hand-in-hand with this weird kind of coup d'etat that his brother is launching, and Jack pleads with Saren to stop before it's too late. And so we have this other panel up here from the comic, and in this scene, it's a pretty important one, because Saren has this internal monologue going on. And it starts with him saying, for some, being the brother of a famous general like Deicolus might be a path to career success. And basically it goes over, he's plagued by trying to reconcile two thoughts. One, that he's fully capable and earned his own spot working for his general brother on his own. And number two, that this situation is the first one he's encountered that he thinks that's out of his control. And that he's in this predicament because he went to work for his brother. So family, tradition, honor, self-reliance, all of these things are kind of at odds because he can't accept the fact that he has been duped. And he's been walking into this blind, following his brother into a situation that is going to go out of their hands.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's like he's starting to wake up. He's starting to realize the mess.
A little bit.
The mess of everything.
But he's not giving up on his brother. He goes to his brother, Decilus, and he tries getting him to realize that there is no controlling these indoctrinated Turians. It's going to backfire. Mm-hmm. But Decilus won't listen. Decilus is convinced he can manipulate them enough to overthrow the, quote, sniveling civilian leaders of Palavin, and then, quote, all of our rivals.
Right, because any great, wonderful fascist dictator clearly thinks everyone else is below them, so...
Yep, and yeah, they're always proven right, right? Cowards usually take the easy way out, but go on. Saren goes to check up on Jack, eventually, after talking with Decilus. And Jack has been hauled over to be locked back up with Eva. But then the two talk, and they start getting to talk. They're under the temple, it looks like. They're underneath it, and they're close to where these indoctrinated Turians have been on their own accord, burrowing into the stone underneath the temple. So that's kind of where Jack and Saren are talking. And then the Turian, indoctrinated Turian, so they're burrowing and they break through these ancient walls. And the walls are inscribed with some of the same ancient Turian language that no one, not even Decilus, can read. But Jack can somehow understand it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So the elusive man can somehow read these, and it's revealed that it's because he was indoctrinated by that artifact on Shanxi.
Yeah. Yeah. He got a brain dump of this stuff that he now can understand.
Right. Well, and then you start wondering, well, how can he read this stuff from an artifact on Shanxi if now they're on Palavin and they're in a temple that's very old?
Right. Maybe it's very, very, very old, right? Like,
it is.
That's where this is going.
And yeah. It is. It is very, very old. And Jack tells Saren that these walls are a story and they're instructions not for you. They're for the indoctrinated Turians. And because he says that, basically, they've played Decilus. They wanted the artifact brought here.
Uh-huh.
They wanted this all along, and Decilus thought he was controlling them. And then it's revealed that underneath this temple is another hidden artifact.
Yeah. So it all ties back to the Reapers and the things that they've planted and left.
Yes.
Yeah.
And so basically, this is a weird part, right? Because we learn in the Mass Effect series that there's an extinction cycle every 50,000 years. Mm-hmm. And roughly that the Reapers only target spacefaring races at the apex of their evolution.
Right.
So how would any of the previous Turians have been around and been the target of Reaper's ire in a previous cycle? You know what I mean? Then how would then how would Turians be around in this cycle too? But I'll suspend my disbelief, because here's what the elusive man tells Saren. Your people discovered this temple a long time ago. And then he explains that back then, the artifact also made super strong indoctrinated Turians. The only difference was those same Turians, the ancient Turians referred to as Veluvian priests.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
It's not just a legend. It really did happen. But the priests were clearly evil and demented, and they weren't these characters to be revered in legend.
Yeah.
That's why the ancients that's why they sealed off this temple.
Right. Right. Not because it was holy, but because it was terrible.
Yes. Because it was unholy they needed to.
Yeah. Yeah. I wonder, you get into the whole, like, why would the Reapers have been there if they were not one of the groups they were culling? Maybe they were making preparations. Maybe they saw that in the next cycle they would be. And so they planted some things ahead of time because they're like, well, they're not quite there yet, but give them another 50,000 years and they're going to be there. You might get some, maybe that's a kind of hand wavy explanation. I don't know.
Maybe. It doesn't really ever go into how old the temple is exactly. That could give us the answer right off the bat. It's possible the temple is, you know, younger than 50,000 years.
Yeah. Well, it's, even in our own world, buildings don't really last 50,000 years very well. Even ones made out of stone. After 50,000 years, they fall apart. I mean, just look at the Egyptian pyramids, for example, like 3-4,000 year old structures. Now, multiply that by 10, how much of that structure remains? I mean, I'm sure a big portion of it, but given time, those things eventually could just look like big hills.
I mean, it would probably also depend on Palavan's atmosphere, too. But yeah, I mean, it's kind of remarkable that it is still standing. So maybe yeah. You're right. Maybe it is more like 3-4,000 years ago. The Reapers left behind these artifacts to make the next cycle easier, that kind of thing.
Maybe. Yeah.
But regardless, it had been sealed off for quite a long time, long enough to become part of myth. So Saren and Jack, a.k.a. Tim, start questioning why. What's the whole point of advancing a species physically but sacrificing all intelligence? Because you have to keep in mind, at this time, this is 2157. That this is happening.
Yeah.
No one really knows or takes the whole idea of Reapers seriously. Like, it hasn't been popularized.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Anybody who even says anything about it, just it's like, whatever. They don't pay attention. I mean, it's Shepard's whole dilemma, right? Is the whole, like, he comes across stuff and nobody takes him seriously.
Right. Liara knows about it because she's a bookworm and because she studied the Protheans, and it's relevant to a theory of their demise. But, you know, when Jack has a vision from the artifact, I'm not sure that he quite understands that these are the Reapers. He just understands it's a threat.
Yeah.
And then Ben Hislop, the one who I said, quote unquote, died, became a zombified husk.
Yeah.
Well, he didn't really die. He had become a zombified husk, but somehow has retained enough of his humanity that he chimes in verbally, of course, right? And says, why? Because it wants us that way. It wants us physically strong, but no intelligence. Saying, and Ben says, quote, it knows. They know about humanity now because of me.
Dun, dun, dun. Is that
huge?
Does that actually
revelation.
Does that actually track? Is there no other way they would have known about humanity?
No, there's other evidence that they knew about humanity, but it is interesting that they're pointing to this in this comic, which was written by Mac Walters, not like some third party writer. This is a Mass Effect writer who wrote this comic, and at least Ben is under the impression that the Reapers definitely know about humanity and roughly how advanced they are circa First Contact War because Ben touched the artifact.
Right.
But there's also evidence, like in Mass Effect 1, there was a text-based RPG kind of series of messages where you found evidence of species, spacefaring species, monitoring the evolution of humanity. From Cro-Magnon era.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I remember some of the details on that now. Yes. What this may have done was update their information and go, oh, humanity is now no longer on Earth. They are spacefaring.
Yes. Interesting. However, you'd think, you know, humanity, not as, you know, in our current form, but 50,000 years ago, we were still around. So you would think that maybe the Reapers would leave behind an artifact on a human world.
Yeah.
Or maybe they didn't because they were trying to test to see if we were spacefaring yet.
Right.
Would they detect humans on a different world than Earth?
Right. Right. Yeah. Interesting stuff.
So anyway, that's a huge mind-shattering revelation just from one of the comics that you may or may not have read. But Saren finally snaps, right? He says, I'm an Artorias, but I'm sworn to protect my people. And he calls someone in the military command and declares an unsecured bioweapon emergency. Because he's finally realizing that his brother's getting played and all of Palavin might be at risk. Because the entire point was, the Reapers would put these artifacts in the town square and then just slowly, one by one, convert everyone into Reaper thralls.
Mm-hmm.
And there was, you know, past a certain amount of population who's been turned, you can't stop the tide.
Oh, yeah.
Because they're so strong.
Right, right. It's like a virus. It's just, it grows and then it's everywhere. Yeah.
Yes. So Saren snaps. He declares this emergency and he runs back upstairs. And the indoctrinated Turians now are restless. I think they're aware that they've been made.
Yeah.
And their fate is in the balance.
Or maybe they're just hungry. Has anybody fed them? You know, maybe they just need to eat.
Their little mandibles.
They're hangry.
Yeah. Like that. Yeah. So they break ranks and then they disobey Decilus. Decilus gives one a direct order and then they disobey him and they smack him to the ground. And this is the first time any of them have, you know, been violent against Decilus, who was parading around as their leader.
Right.
And then Saren, along with other Turian soldiers, tries to block their escape, ultimately opening fire at the so-called Voluvian priests.
Right, right.
Saren, again, tries reasoning with his brother, saying that, you know, hey, we need to get out of this temple. This is a nightmare. Let's abandon this whole thing. Decilus doesn't listen. And eventually, he is tackled by one of the indoctrinated directly into the artifact. And he makes contact with it. And then he falls after this, you know, big electric eruption.
Oof, all the hubris.
Yeah.
Finally getting...
That's a lot of hubris.
Yeah. Mm.
And hours later, right, he wakes up. Decilus wakes up. He's not completely fully zombified. So maybe he did get a similar understanding from the beacon that Jack did.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe there's like basically a second elusive man and he's Turian.
the elusive Turian?
The elusive Turian.
That's not Tim anymore.
No, it's... Tit?
It's Tit.
Oh, if it isn't Tim and his counterpart Tit.
This was such an intense episode. We were like, I made some jokes and some goofs, but for the most part, we stayed on. And then we get Tit.
There is an elusive Turian, probably. He doesn't last long, though.
Okay.
Because he's woken up hours later after this, you know, after being thrown into the monolith. And then he hears Saren's voice and he's like, Saren, where are you? And he turns around and Saren is talking to him through a communicator laying on the ground. And Saren has apparently left the temple, sealed it off, and fully intends to blow it up with his own brother inside.
Mm. And then we have this image from the comic.
Yeah. And so he tells his brother, quote, I'm sorry, brother. I have a duty to Palavin like you do. We all do. Some secrets were meant to stay buried until we're ready to understand them. Saren's final words to his brother are, I will mourn for you and avenge you.
Well, the scene in the picture for anybody listening is this gigantic explosion and then Saren's face like real up close with the light of the explosion like on his face.
Yes, he's watching. He's basically arranging for his brother's death. And it looks like he called it an orbital strike or something on the temple.
Yeah.
Everyone inside is dead.
Yeah,
for sure.
Yeah. Well, he needed to put an end to it. But I can see why he might also be grumpy about this. Like, this is another reason to just hate everybody.
Right. So this is what I was saying when I said that it needed Goyle's explanation to Anderson about, oh, well, he's just pissed off because his brother died in the war. That's not really accurate.
Yeah. Yeah. Not.
I mean, it kind of is, but not really.
Yeah.
So, you know, is this Saren's villain origin story? I think kind of, because I think it explains why Saren hates humanity. But I think he ultimately blames humans for what happened to his brother. For he doesn't take responsibility for making the decision to kill his brother. He doesn't blame his brother for what his brother did.
Yeah.
I think Saren blames humanity for having to kill his brother, because if you're Saren, in Saren's mind, if humans never colonized Shanxi, maybe we would have never discovered that artifact there. And then we would have never brought it here back to Palavin. We would have never found the artifact under the temple. I'd still have my brother around, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. It also shows that he's willing to go to very extreme measures to get what he needs done. And once you break that boundary, like, I feel like that seal is broken, right? Like, extreme measures are now on the table.
Yeah, so. For lack of a better word, Saren lost part of his humanity.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. This was probably the moment. Like, he never seemed like a great guy, but the moments like this push you closer and closer to that edge, and then you go over.
Yeah, and the crazy part is this is really just half of his villain origin story.
What? There's so, more?
But wait. And we are out of time, so we're going to have to cover the other half next week.
Awesome. Well, I look forward to it. This has been fun. And thank you for joining us. Chat, thank you for being here. I hope you have enjoyed another episode of the Mass Effect Lorecast. Sam, you have anything else going on you want to share before we head out?
Yeah, I'm streaming tomorrow from when we're recording this. So every Saturday, right, on Twitch. And you can find me on Twitch and Twitter at N7 The Legend, streaming more of my personal canon playthrough. I've now made it to Mass Effect 2, finished Mass Effect 1. I'm also playing a lot of Baldur's Gate. I'm in Act 2 right now.
Nice. You've gotten further than I have. I've never finished Act 1 yet. I've restarted multiple times. I've tried playing with other people. I need to get like an actual group together and just play through it.
Honestly, I think it's like because we're older, right? And everyone has different schedules. It might behoove you to just put your nose down and focus on the one character and just kind of go, you know, until you don't want to go anymore.
Yeah.
And then do subsequent playthroughs with other people, because I don't know, I've really put my nose to the grindstone with that game and I love it. I mean, it just won Game of the Year I think for good reason.
It got like 7 awards last night. Yeah, it was crazy. Yeah. Also, I played it a little bit this last week. I did part of a charity thing with some of the guys from the Elder Scrolls Lorecast and the Tales of Tamriel. We raised a bunch of money. It was lots of fun. But I played Baldur's Gate for the charity stream, played with Rob the Princess from our community. And if you want to go look at the VOD is still up. We created a team of very small people, only gnomes and halflings. And our two characters were based around action, like, you know, movie fight people. So I had Chuck Gnomus.
That's amazing.
I was Chuck Gnomus, and he was, what was his character? Name another, like,
Arnold?
No, it wasn't Arnold. It was
Sylvester Stallone.
No, it was Kung Fu guy.
Bruce Lee.
That's right, Bruce Lee. But he was Bruce Wee because he was a gnome and he was wee. He's little. And so we made monks, and he was like a monk barbarian. And then we brought two other characters, and we only had small people, and it was wonderful. But we only got through like 4 hours because that's as long.
I made a forest gnome bard. And he has very magnificent, like, hair. You know that one hairstyle kind of looks like the mayor of Whoville?
Yeah, okay, yes.
He has that hair. It's black, and he's got a black twirly mustache.
Nice.
And he looks like a real rapscallion, right? That's but he's a awesome. Forest gnome, and he's like yay tall. And I give him a criminal background, and now he's a bard, and he has like a +7 to deception.
Dude,
it's
bards,
really fun.
Both bards are so good to use in that game, especially where all the conversation stuff. So that's awesome. I'm glad you're having fun with that. Yeah, I need to get into it. I really just want to play it with like a full group of like three other people, me and like three other people. And just, you know, even if it's just like an hour or two at a time, a few times a week or whatever, I want to just, you know, get through it like with a group. But that'll be for another time. If you want to check out my stuff, all my stuff's over at robotsradio.net. I do lots of other lore casts, and you're welcome to go check all that stuff out. But we'll be back next week. And Sam, I hope you have fun playing all those games. Chat, we'll see you later. Thanks for being here, everybody. Have a wonderful week.
Thanks for tuning into the Mass Effect Lorecast. We'd love to hear your opinion and thoughts on the lore of Mass Effect. Reach out to us on Twitter at Mass Effect Cast, or check out the Robots Radio Discord. Also, you can send us an email at masseffectlorecast@gmail.com.
Some things you wouldn't mind being stuck with, like a huge inheritance. But a phone that has to be plugged in just right so it charges is not one of those things. Switch to Verizon and we'll pay off your old phone up to $800 via prepaid MasterCard for a new one on us. Just trade in any phone from our top brands with select unlimited plans. $829.99 purchase with new smartphone line on select unlimited plans. Minimum $90 per month with auto pay plus taxes and fees for 36 months required. Less $830 trade-in / promo credit applied over 36 months. Trade-in terms apply. Payoff phone requires smartphone purchase and port-in with new smartphone line on select plan. Must provide most recent bill showing payoff amount of eligible phone. Additional terms apply.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates. so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/kidsandfamily. Just go to Indeed.com/kidsandfamily right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.